And now we're going to have our first Bible reading, which is Lindsay.
The first reading is Matthew chapter 2, and it's verses 13 to 23. When they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. "Get up," he said. "Take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him." So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night, and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet, "Out of Egypt I called my son." When Herod realized that he had been outwitted by the Magi, he was furious. And he gave orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem and its vicinity who were 2 years old and under, in accordance with the time he had learned from the Magi. Then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. "A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning, Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted, because they are no more." After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Great. Well, we're doing something slightly different today. We've got everyone in together, and there's no Sunday club. So I'm speaking to both grown-ups and children together. And we're going to be looking at this passage a little bit, but we're also going to be dipping into the Old Testament where this passage is quoted. But let me start with a question for the children. And if you've got your clipboards with things on, you might want to have a look at this as well. Children, have you ever found it really hard to stop doing something that somebody's told you not to do? Is that something you can relate with? Maybe your mum or your dad says, "Don't do that," and you just find it really, really hard to stop. You really want to do it. Maybe it's the first picture. For those who can't see, I'm sorry about that, but maybe it's the first picture on your clipboards. Can anyone tell me what you've got in that first picture? First picture, what's going on in the first picture? We've got some people fighting over a toy and trying to snatch it away, okay? Maybe that's you, maybe. In fact, I think my children are demonstrating this right at this very moment. Being told not to do it, but fighting it really hard not to snatch. And what's the second picture? Second picture. Two people fighting. Actually hitting each other. Maybe that's what you find hard not to do when someone tells you not to do it. Or maybe it's the last one. What's going on in the last one? Again, I think my children are demonstrating. It's shouting. We get that, don't we? Somebody raises their voice and says, "Don't shout, be quiet." In my family, we talk about, we might say something like, no, that's an outside voice. Which, to be honest, the kind of levels at which they scream, I'm not sure it's even an outside voice. But grown-ups, it's not just children, is it, who find it hard not to do things we know we shouldn't do? I mean, of those three examples, we had all of them in my family yesterday, and two of them were me. I'll leave you to guess which ones. But we find it hard, don't we? We know. Have you ever had that experience where you say, "Never again"? Oh, wow. Never again. Never again am I going to do that thing. I know that it's wrong. I know that God doesn't want me to do it. And yet I keep going back to the same old sins, the same old things, again and again and again. And breathe. But but we know what that's like, isn't it? Where there's something that we know we shouldn't do, but we just keep on doing it. Now, last week, I used the word slave to describe this. And that may have been something that might have brought images to our minds of another kind of slavery. Maybe you were thinking of the terrible slave trade centuries ago, where people were forcibly taken from Africa over to the Caribbean, to the Americas, and made to work for nothing, made to do stuff that their masters wanted them to do. Maybe that's what you're thinking of when I say slavery, or maybe you're thinking, and you've got your kind of Bible hat on, and you're thinking, in the Old Testament, weren't God's people slaves in Egypt, where they were slaves to Pharaoh the king, and Pharaoh told them what to do, and they couldn't get away, they needed to be rescued. Well, the Bible uses slavery in another way. The Bible says that we are slaves to sin, to going our own way. We're slaves to, if you like, doing what somebody tells us not to do. We can't help it. We need someone to set us free. That's how the Bible talks about sin and slavery. It says we are controlled by sin. We need someone to set us free. And so last week, we saw that Jesus was the shepherd king. He's a king. He can rescue us from slavery to sin. And he's a shepherd king. He is strong and he is kind. He looks after us and cares for us. He is the king that we need. But how is it that he sets us free from slavery to sin? Well, we'll start to see a little bit of that in today's passage in Matthew in just a bit. But first, children, I'm going to do something very ambitious here. I'm going to try and sum up the entire Old Testament in about 3 minutes, okay? Who thinks I can do it? I'm not so sure myself. Okay, I'll cheat. I won't go right the way back to the start. I'll go back to Abraham. Abraham's really near the start. And in fact, if you've got a Bible open, you can see Abraham just by flicking back one page. Matthew chapter 1, verse 1. We see that Jesus is described as the son of Abraham. And that's because Abraham was the father of all of God's people. All of the Jewish people, as they were known, were all children of this one man and his family, all of his descendants. And God promised that this family would bless the world. But they kept on messing up. They were like us. They kept on doing the things that God had said not to do. They were slaves to sin. And one time, there were so many of them, they were living in a place called Egypt, and there was a king, a bad king called Pharaoh, and Pharaoh made them slaves to him to do exactly what he said. And God said, I'm going to rescue you from slavery. I'm going to take you out of Egypt. I'm going to set you free from slavery. And that was called the Exodus. Exodus just means leaving, and they left Egypt. God had set them free from slavery to Pharaoh, but they kept on doing the wrong things. They kept on going against what God had told them to do. They kept on saying yes when God had said no, and saying no when God had said yes. In other words, they were still slaves, but they were slaves to sin, not to Pharaoh anymore. And so God promised, one day there's going to be a better exodus. I'm not just going to set you free from slavery in Egypt. I'm going to set you free from slavery to sin. And that would be good news. But the years went by, and God's people kept on messing up, kept on doing the wrong things they knew they shouldn't do. And God said, you're in the land I've given you, but if you keep on going like this, I'm going to kick you out of the land. You do not deserve to be in it. And they kept on sinning and they kept on messing up. And so eventually enough was enough and they got kicked out of the land that God had given to them. But God promised that one day they would come back from the land. And at this point, we've got our second reading. Tom.
So the second reading's from Jeremiah 31, verses 15 to 17. This is what the Lord says. A voice is heard in Ramah, mourning and great weeping. Rachel weeping for her children and refusing to be comforted because they are no more. This is what the Lord says. Restrain your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for your work will be rewarded, declares the Lord. They will return from the land of the enemy, so there is hope for your descendants, declares the Lord. Your children will return to their own land.
Thanks very much. So there, God promises to his people, as they're being taken into exile, that they're going to come back. Ramah was the place that all of the people were. They were put into one place in Israel in order to go on this big journey. So Ramah was like the collection point for them to leave. And Rachel's like the mother of all of the Jewish people. And she's crying because her children are being taken away. And God says, stop crying. They will return. They're going to come back. And sure enough, God brought his people back from exile into the land he had given them. He'd rescued them from exile. But even though they were back in the land, they still had foreign kings over them, bad kings. First the Babylonians, then the Persians, then the Greeks, then the Romans. And at the time that Jesus was born, there was bad King Herod. And so, yes, they were rescued from exile, but they still had that sense of not being at home. And God kept on promising, one day I am going to do an even better rescue from exile. I am going to bring you home, and I am going to be your king, and I am going to care for you, not these foreign nations. There's going to be an even better rescue from exile. So you got that? God's promising a better exodus, not just freedom from Pharaoh the king, but freedom from slavery to sin, and not just rescue from exile in Babylon, but rescue from the exile that we all experience, where we feel like this world, it just isn't quite home, and we need a place with God as king where everything will be made right again. And that is what God promises. And he promised again and again and again. Time for our third reading, where we see God make exactly that promise as he tells this story that I've just told. Thank you, Naomi.
So I'm reading from Hosea chapter 11, verses 1 to 11. When Israel was a child, I loved him, and out of Egypt I called my son. But the more they were called, the more they went away from me. They sacrificed to the Baals, and they burned incense to images. It was I who taught Ephraim to walk, taking them by the arms, but they did not realize it was I who healed them. I led them with cords of human kindness, with ties of love. To them I was like one who lifts a little child to the cheek, and I bent down to feed them. Will they not return to Egypt, and will not Assyria rule over them because they refuse to repent? A sword will flash in their cities, it will devour their false prophets and put an end to their plans. My people are determined to turn from me. Even though they call me God Most High, I will by no means exalt them. How can I give you up, Ephraim? How can I hand you over, Israel? How can I treat you like Admah? How can I make you like Zeboim? My heart has changed within me. All my compassion is aroused. I will not carry out my fierce anger, nor will I devastate Ephraim again. For I am God and not a man, the Holy One among you. I will not come down against their cities. They will follow the Lord. He will roar like a lion. When he roars, his children will come trembling from the west. They will come from Egypt, trembling like sparrows, from Assyria, fluttering like doves. I will settle them in their homes, declares the Lord.
Thank you. So there we have in the prophet Hosea, God telling the story that I've just told, saying, when Israel was a child, I loved him. and out of Egypt I called my son. He calls Israel, the Jewish people, his child, his son, his adopted people. And he says, I loved them, but they kept on rebelling. And so I sent them away. They will return to Egypt and to Assyria, to exile and to slavery, as it were. But how can I give you up, Ephraim, he says? How can I hand you over, Israel? How can I treat you like that? I will come for you, and you will come back from Egypt. You will come back from Assyria, from Babylon, and I will settle you in your homes. He is promising a return from exile. He is promising a better exodus. But here's the thing. It had already happened physically. He's pointing to a bigger rescue. A rescue from slavery to sin. From not being at home. From needing a king who will love us and care for us. That is what he is pointing forward to. And so, what does that have to do with today's passage? Now, children, some of you, I think, have already started this, but on the back of your sheet, there is some colouring in to do. I've got a black and white outline of the story that we've read in Matthew, of Mary and Joseph and the boy Jesus. And maybe now's a time to just start colouring that in, having a look at that. And I'll talk more to the grown-ups for a second, but keep an ear out because I'll bring you in a minute. Because grown-ups, here's the thing. We've read this story, and perhaps it's familiar to you, perhaps it's less familiar. It's kind of left on the end of Christmas stories because it's so brutal. The killing of so many children. From what we know, archaeological evidence and things of that at the time, there were probably 30 toddler boys or baby boys who were murdered. Now, as Herod's atrocities goes, this is probably just a footnote. He did far worse things, but that doesn't change things if you're one of those parents. It is a horrific story, and it is a story of the kind of world that we live in where we feel like, no, this is not how it should be. This is the world we need rescuing from. What's going on here? So, verse 13, when they had gone, an angel of the Lord appeared to Joseph in a dream. Get up, he said, take the child and his mother and escape to Egypt. Stay there until I tell you, for Herod is going to search for the child to kill him. So he got up, took the child and his mother during the night and left for Egypt, where he stayed until the death of Herod. And so was fulfilled what the Lord had said through the prophet. Out of Egypt, I called my son. Well, we've just read that. And I said, that bit of Hosea, starting out of Egypt, I call my son, was all about God's people in the Old Testament and about how God had rescued his people from slavery to Pharaoh. So what's it doing here? It wasn't so much a prophecy back then. It was a historical narrative. It was saying what had already happened. What does Matthew mean when he says this was fulfilled by Jesus going to Egypt and coming back? Just the same. Verse 16 and onwards, when Herod realizes he's been outwitted, he gives orders to kill all the boys in Bethlehem in accordance with the time he'd learned. And then what was said through the prophet Jeremiah was fulfilled. A voice is heard in Ramah, weeping and great mourning. But again, this was more a historical narrative. This was something that had already happened. What does it mean that it is now fulfilled? Well, here's what's going on. And children, maybe you can listen back in at this point. The Old Testament story of the Exodus or the exile, they're like black and white outlines. They really happened. But they're like black and white outlines of what God's son Israel did. And now Jesus is, if you like, he's colouring in. He's colouring in the outline. He's filling up the empty white spaces as God's perfect, obedient son. In other words, what Matthew wants us to see here in this passage is that the life of Jesus is following the pattern of the life of God's people in the Old Testament. Only where they always failed, Jesus never will. They were God's son, to use the language of Hosea, but they weren't obedient. They weren't perfect. No, they kept on doing the same things again and again. They kept on messing up. They kept on saying no where God had said yes. But now Jesus has come and he will always say yes when God says yes. He will always say no to what God says no to. He is the perfect, obedient son. And he's, if you like, he's filling up the life of God's people in the Old Testament. Those big stories that really happened are still, in their way, pointing forward to something better to come. So, God really saved his people from slavery in Egypt. But Matthew's saying, no, Jesus is now filling that up. He is the one who is going to save from slavery to sin. And God's people really were taken to exile, and there really was a group of them at Ramah, and there was much weeping. And Jesus is filling up the story and saying that I am going to offer you the return from exile. Matthew, when he mentions this thing in verse 18, it's kind of like a hyperlink on a web page. You know, you click on a link and it goes to another page. Matthew wants us to look up the context of this verse. He wants us to see it's not just that we live in a world where this kind of stuff happens, where there is weeping and great mourning, where people are killed, where sin is horrific. No, he wants us to see what God promises next as well. God promises that return from exile. God promises that this kind of world, where Herods have their reign, is coming to an end. The exile will not be forever. There is a return from exile where there will be a new world with a new king, a good king, where we'll be at home. Jesus is filling up the story of God's people in the Old Testament like colouring in a black and white outline. Let me wrap up in our final section. Because that's all very well if he's come for us. So what's our last section say? Because if he hasn't come for us, then all of this is a great story, but it doesn't hit us here. So what are these last verses about? Verse 21. Joseph got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archelaus was reigning in Judea, he was afraid to go there, so he withdrew to the district of Galilee and went and lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he, that is, Jesus, would be called a Nazarene. You'd be amazed at just quite how much has been written on what it means. It will be fulfilled what the prophets said, that he would be called a Nazarene. Because if you go through the entire Old Testament, you won't find a single verse that says Jesus would be called a Nazarene or the Messiah will be called a Nazarene. So what on earth does it mean? Well, there's a couple of things that people have talked about. One is, and if you were here for Christmas morning, you'll have heard Matt talking yesterday about how Jesus is described as a branch that grows from a stump, a new king on the, of the line of David. The word for branch, Nezer, sounds a bit like Nazareth. So that's one possibility, that actually it's a pun, it's a playing with words. But I think it's actually much more likely that Nazareth is important because Nazareth is completely unimportant. Nazareth is important because it is completely unimportant. It's a nowhere place. No one famous is from there until Jesus. No one famous is from there afterwards. We even struggle to find archaeological records of it. It's so small. It was the kind of place that if somebody said you were from there, they'd go, where? It wasn't important. It was tiny. It was kind of away from all of the centres of power. In fact, it was the last possible place you would look for a king, because it was just so ordinary, just so nondescript, normal. And that's the point. Jesus came for ordinary people. He came for people like us. He came for people from places like Hardwick. He came for us. That's what it means that he's called a Nazarene. It means forever and for eternity, the divine Son of God, King of the universe, is identified with nowhere, Nowheresville. A place that no one would have heard of if it weren't for him. He's identified with people like us. Now, you may have been keeping it hidden, but I don't think any of us in this room are particularly important in the world's eyes. But God came for you and consequently makes us important, his chosen family. And what does he offer us? What does he offer to you? What does he offer to the people around us in the Hardwick Estate, in Stockton, Teesside and beyond? He offers a better exodus, freedom, not just from a king, but from slavery to sin. He offers us not just a return from exile, but a new home with a king who loves us and cares for us. He offers us everything that we need, everything that we could want for, and he offers it to the ordinary folk of Nazareth, of Hardwick, of Teesside, of this church, of this area. You, me.